This is the Archaeology News Weekly for the week ending 4th of December, and I'm David Connolly. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details on each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. Now, the main headlines from around the world are as follows. Willemi Rock Art shows Aboriginal dreaming tracks in Australia. A study treads on the human footprint claim from Mexico. And Sardinian remains have been recovered by police in Puerto Torres. Ancient canals reveal the underpinnings of early Andean civilization. And prehistoric settlements are found in Greece. Wine may also have been produced as far back as the Neolithic. Archaeologists surveying rugged bushland outside Sydney in Australia have discovered evidence that an ancient Aboriginal dreaming track runs through the wilderness where the Jurassic-era Willemi pine was found. Dreaming tracks record the journey of spirit ancestors as they moved through the landscape, transforming ancestral lands and laying down the law. Around 1,000 known tracks are believed to exist, mainly in central and northern Australia, says Professor Paul Tasson of Griffith University, whose work was presented at an archaeological conference in Western Australia last week. Tasson says a survey of Willemi National Park west of Sydney, beginning in September 2004, has found numerous paintings and engravings. They found dozens of previously unrecorded rock art sites, and it appears that the traditional Aboriginal travel route, possibly a dreaming track, runs right across the national park. The rock art evidence suggests that there may once have been dreaming tracks across southeast Australia, as significant and detailed as those in the north and centre. The discovery comes after Tasson and his team announced in 2003 that they had discovered more than 200 rock paintings in an undisclosed rock shelter deep in the Willemi wilderness. Some areas were so remote they were only accessible by helicopter. The sites are believed to be over 4,000 years old and may represent birds and human-bird hybrids, which is unusual for Aboriginal art but probably reflected the area's rich bird life. At the time it was hailed as a major find, but since then Tasson and his colleagues, including members of local Aboriginal communities, have made more startling discoveries suggesting the area has major cultural significance. It looks like this is a path that people used and marked for many thousands of years. The science will remain secret, but will be documented for posterity. His team will begin new fieldwork in the area next April. In July, researchers in England claimed footprints in ash deposits proved that humans were in the Americas 40,000 years ago, much earlier than the accepted date of 11,500 years ago. But Paul René, director of the Berkeley Geochronological Centre and a professor at University of California, Berkeley, says the prints are actually 1.3 million years old. You're really left with only two possibilities, Rennie said. One is that they are really old hominids, shockingly old in fact, or they are not footprints. Earlier this year, a British-Mexican team led by Dr. Sylvia Gonzalez of Liverpool John Moores University announced that the site at Vasquelo Lake near Puebla in southern Mexico likely contained the oldest evidence of human occupation in the Americas. The researchers hypothesized that early hunters walked across ash freshly deposited near a lake by volcanoes that are still active today. The so-called footprints were subsequently covered by more ash and then inundated by lake waters, eventually turning to rock. The researchers used several methods to date minerals and fossils from above, below and on the footprint layer itself. Radiocarbon dating was carried out on shells and animal bones in the sequence, and mammoth teeth were dated using a technique called electron spin resonance. They obtained dates for the lake sediments incorporated into the ash by a technique called optically stimulated luminescence. The results converged on the highly controversial data of 40,000 years. Under the traditional view, the first Americas trekked across Siberia to Alaska, across a land bridge that linked these land masses at the end of the last ice age, between 10 to 12,500 years ago. But Paul René, a geochronologist at Stanford University, and colleagues have now used argon dating and paleomagnetic analysis to show that the so-called Zalnine basaltic tuff, on which the purported footprints were found, were in fact far older even than Dr. Gonzalez and her team suggested. The results show the tuff is 1.3 million years old. The footprints would therefore predate the first known appearance of Homo sapiens in Africa by more than a million years. This casts serious doubts on whether these marks are actually human footprints. although some scientists have conceded it is possible that archaic humans such as Homo erectus could have made it to the Americas, the possibility is considered remote in the extreme. The use of radiocarbon dating on shells from the sequences was also criticised, as freshwater shells are notorious for producing erroneous ages. Dr. Gonzalez said her team would be submitting a formal scientific response for publication in an academic journal. She added she would not rule out the possibility that her theory was correct without doing further research. The new findings doesn't necessarily mean that 1.3 million years is the correct date. The results would need to be replicated to make sure that everything else makes sense, said Dr. Gonzalez. She also said that part of the problem is verifying the dates of deposits in Mexico's Vasquilo Basin in the amount of different materials in the particles. But the fact is that the case doesn't automatically mean that they aren't footprints. Her team has funding to do further analysis in the basin for a further 3 years. Dr. Waters said that he thought the marks were actually left over from the quarrying. The Zalnine tuff is a lithified volcanic ash. The locals go out there and quarry it for building materials, he explained. What you're seeing in the depressions is where the metal tools are divoting into the tuff. Every time it rains, water collects in the depressions, sediments collect in them, and then they weather out into these odd shapes. More on that later, I expect. Police in Porto Torres in Sardinia and in Italy have recovered 71 ancient items inside private premises. The remains were recovered in two parts of the city and are traceable to two distinct settlements. Nuragic remains from around 2000 BCE include millstones, pestles and farming tools, which would seem to prove the presence of a large organised settlement, and are seen to be the scars of industrial farming, a fact which is at odds with the area being subject to heritage listing, which in theory bars farmers from using the land. The second batch of remains were the marble friezes of an imperial Roman temple, coins and tombstones. Canals discovered in the Peruvian Andes dating back over 5,400 years offer long-sought proof that irrigation was at the heart of the development of one of the Earth's first civilizations. Anthropologists and archaeologists discovered the canals in Peru's upper middle Xana Valley, approximately 60 kilometers east of the Pacific coast. Preliminary results indicate that one of the canals is in fact over 6,700 years old, while others have been confirmed at over 5,400 years old. They are the oldest known canals yet discovered in South America. One of the signatures of the beginnings of civilization and complex society is intensive agriculture, where you not only have crops but also irrigation technology. That element, irrigation technology, was always missing in the archaeological findings of the early Andean civilization. They found it by looking further up the valley, away from the coastal plains, and by excavating deeper. Anthropologists and archaeologists have presumed that the canals that helped support early Andean civilization had lain closer to the surface and were hence destroyed by human activity and nature over time. Professor De La Haye and his team found that the canals had not been destroyed but had been buried by sediment. The team made its initial discovery of the canal system in 1989 and has been working since then to uncover the broader picture of canals and the civilization that they supported. People were building these canals and creating artificial wetlands, essentially garden plots, in the Andes over 5,400 years ago. This was an important moment for the civilization as it established a codependency between the crops and the people, which allowed and encouraged larger groups of people to begin to settle down in one place. The team has uncovered four canals ranging in length from 1 to 4 kilometres. The canals are narrow, symmetric, shallow and U-shaped. They were lined with stones and small pebbles and appear to be individually designed to take advantage of different periods of water availability. The canals were built along the edge of a terrace above a nearby stream and used gravity to deliver water downhill to the agricultural fields. A striking feature of the canals is that they are located on a very slight slope, indicating that their builders were able to engineer them to function hydraulically in a relatively sophisticated manner. All domestic sites found in the area lie within 2.5 kilometres of the canals and share tools, structures, dietary remains and other features, indicating that they were all part of the same society. Archaeologists in northern Greece have uncovered traces of two prehistoric farming settlements, dating back as early as 6000 BCE. The first site, located on a plot earmarked for coal mining by Greece's Public Power Corporation, yielded 5 human burials as well as artefacts, including clay figurines of humans and animals, sealed stones, pottery and stone tools. The one-acre site near Ptolemaida, some 330 miles northwest of Athens, had been inhabited for a short period during the early Neolithic era, some 6,000 to 5,500 BCE. Some 25 Neolithic settlements have been discovered in the area. A second smaller site, also dating between 6,000 to 5,500 BCE, was excavated near Grivena, some 260 miles northwest of Athens. Archaeologists found a number of rare figurines in the settlement, which contained a workshop for producing stone tools. The first traces of human settlement in Greece date to at least 40,000 BCE. And finally, Patrick McGovern of the University of Pennsylvania Museum of Archaeology and Anthropology recently found evidence that the first bottles of wine may have been produced as far back as the Neolithic. McGovern is the author of the book Ancient Wine: The Search for the Origins of Viniculture and is a leader in the field of biochemical archaeology. Fermented beverages have been preferred over water throughout the ages. Some even say that alcohol was a primary agent for the development of Western civilization. Scientists believe that the original inspiration for wine came from humans observing birds and animals eating berries that had been naturally fermented. Once the idea caught on, however, other reasons for maintaining production became important. Wine became a symbol of status or prestige. It can also become important in religion and the local economy. The production of wine requires a relatively stable base of operations, and McGovern's research suggests that these early Near East and Egyptian communities would have been more permanent cultures with a stable food supply and domesticated animals and plants. With this abundance of food came the need for containers that were durable and made from a material that was easily pliable, like clay. The porous structure of these clay vessels is what has made it possible for scientists to analyse wine that is thousands of years old. Clay jars, designed to hold about 2.5 gallons, were found during an excavation conducted by Mary Void near the Haji Firuz Tepe site in northern Zagros Mountains of Iran. A yellowish residue discovered inside a jar was tested using a variety of analyses, including infrared, liquid chromatographic and wet chemical analysis. The chromatographic test showed the best proof that this was indeed wine by revealing the presence of terebinth tree resin. In an upland region like the Haji Firuz, McGovern explained, the wild grapevine and the terebinth tree grew together and produced the fruit and resin about the same time of year. The tree resin was added to the wine during fermentation to help prevent it from turning to vinegar. The combination of finding these two components in the jar together and the discovery of clay stoppers, which are a perfect size to fit the necks of the vessels in close vicinity to the jars, all point to the probability that the grape product inside the jars was indeed wine. McGovern will continue his search for what he calls Stone Age Beaujolais Nouveau by travelling to Turkey, where he hopes to find the origins of grape domestication. And now for an important announcement and request. As many of you may know, Suzanne Osthoff, archaeologist and humanitarian aid worker, has been kidnapped in Iraq. Suzanne has worked tirelessly for many years to aid Iraqi people and to preserve the cultural treasures of Iraq for Iraqis. She is a friend of the Iraqi people, and also her driver has been abducted. Together with SAFE, an organisation dedicated to preserving archaeological treasures for everybody, the British Archaeological Jobs Resource and SAFE have actually created an online petition which we'd actually very much like you all to sign. If you'd like to sign these petitions, you can find them at www.savingantiquities.org and also on the Badger website, that's www.bajr.org. It's very important that you sign both of these petitions so that we can show support for a fellow archaeologist. New archaeological and heritage employment opportunities are also available at Badger. That's www.bajr.org. And remember that more can be found at Stonepages. That's news.stonepages.com. Once again, our hearts go out to Suzanne Osthoff and her family, and we hope for a speedy return of her and her driver and all hostages in Iraq. Thank you very much for listening to Archaeology News Weekly, and we hope you'll return again next week.